Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail bro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit gon' be televised? Black power, be scared guys, that be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail bro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
The moment that is bound to shape the future.
I got a letter from the government. The other day, I opened and read it. They telling me to get it. It said that the message I was bringing brought destruction. I put the pants in the bag and said, fuck them. Here's a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me from the jump. They'd rather see me slumped, face down, shot 5 or 6 times with my kid and a mama in the car, Clark Brown, and I'm done. Stop lying, it's a black and white thing. Redneck ass judge, who's rather watch a nigga hang than indict what's white, not right. Fuck a newsfeed. Black man got the same needs as the Jews need. Who me? I demand reparations. Fuck a cowboy. I'm a native rather of my nation. I'm an African. Black man, fuck down my language. Got me bringing to a white boy. God, that's insane. And if you ask me why they steadily harass me, I reply with that these motherfuckers nasty. And I'm a god, yet they calling me a nigga. They scared of me, so they try to hide behind the trigger, acting badass. Fuck a honky with the badge. I'm a nigga with an attitude. You can kiss my black ass. Ain't no sense in niggas being diplomatic. Televise the revolution. Let these motherfuckers have it. I'm calling up the homie. scared to come through. And I run with the niggas ain't scared to come shoot. Take an eye for an eye, take a tooth for tooth. Do unto others as them others would do all to you. And how they say it make America great. But what America hate, kept America straight and America safe. Mama, fuck that flag. My people are not free, we wanna touch that flag. So quick to try to copyright what came for free. Now they blaming me, and it's plain to see that they mad at that. Like I'm a magic act, yeah, imagine that. Motherfucker, I'm black, fucking vultures. Super quick to steal one's culture, trying to make it your own. Caveman, go home. Over 10 long nose, funny looking ass Donald. Got his nerve disrespecting President Obama. If you don't want us around, then let us leave. Pay the money you've been owing my people since they were set free. That 40 acres and a mule never came, but yet we're still outstanding. Outstanding in the rain, just waiting, pacing, pacing, and praying for God to step up. But now it ain't shit shaking. I was mistaken that your scripture could've helped us. Following the faith of our very own oppressors. No justice, just us. Look at how the aftermath of slavery today still affects us. Our kids educated by the enemy. And they don't know shit about their history. Cause they ain't teaching at school. Leave it up to them coons. And all that's cool. Let the bygones be bygones. And besides, we've been killing off our homes. Shut the fuck up, you know what? Uncle Tom, house niggas, slaves, see they motherfucking nuts cut. I pack steel in the hour of the chaos. And black lives still don't matter till you stay out.
Since I first learned to crawl, then the walk I was running. Then I got older, started planning to run it. Hung around my OGs, they would mold me to run it. Then I got cocky, had a couple of running. Did a small bit, but learned mad wisdom from it. Got my mind right, now it's my time to run it. To the finish line, it's success where I'm running. To make sure that my daughter's after me gon' run it. Running from the past to a higher state of mind. Running from the police, ain't got time to do no time. Running from these fakers since they game be so see-through. And running to that money like I'm running from the people. Running like I'm in a car race just to get it. Running like I'm late, no time to waste, I'm trying to get there. Running like I'm about to save my people when I get there. And do it like a king, ain't never did it when I get there. Cause I'm running, running, running to success. You know you're supposed to be eating off your talents. Running, running, there ain't no stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. I'm running, I'm running, I want what's mine. You can have what you want if you focus your mind. I'm running, and I ain't stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. Running from the media and these lies that they feed us. Fingers to the government and this fake food they feed us. Turn you to a consumer with these messages they feed ya. Keep you disinformed with these messages they feed us. Cancer and disease from this food that they feed ya. Billions on healthcare from this food that they feed us. Kill us, but when it's time for war, then y'all need us. Medical experiment with live human feeders. So now I suggest that you lace up a runner. Go learn your history, boo, it's I trying to run it. Look at our history and see how we used to run it. That's why they kept us down, because they know we're running. But now we're getting smarter, we about to take over. They call it the end of the world, we call it the takeover. Running because you realize this world belongs to us. And running like some kings and queens and warriors. Cause I'm running, running, running to success. You know you're supposed to be eating off your talents. Running, running, there ain't no stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. I'm running, I'm running, I want what's mine. You can have what you want if you focus your mind. I'm running, I'm running, and I ain't stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. I'm running, running, running to success. You know you're supposed to be eating off your talents. Running, running, it ain't no stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. I'm running, I'm running, I want what's mine. You can have what you want if you focus your mind. I'm running, I'm running, and I ain't stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. I'm running.
Till I get free. Till I get I get running through my mind, running through the test. They got time to win the But they classes weren't interesting. They seem to only glorify the Europeans, claiming Africans were only 3/5 of human beings.
They schools can't teach us shit. My people need freedom. We trying to get all we could get. All my high school teachers could suck my dick, telling me white man lies, straight bullshit.
That brainwash camp, they make you think if you drop out, you ain't got a chance to advance in life. They try to make you pull your pants up. Students fight the teachers and get took away in handcuffs. And if that wasn't enough, then they expel you. All your people's understanding, but to them, you a failure. Observation and participation, my favorite teachers. When they beat us in the head with them books, it don't reach us. Whether you break dance or rock, sway to Adidas, or be in the bathroom with your clique, smoking reefer, then you know they mad. Class ain't important unless you add enough cash and multiple. Unemployment ain't rewarding, they may as well teach us extortion. You either get paid or locked up, the principal is like a warden in a 4-year sentence. Mad niggas never finish, but that doesn't mean I couldn't be a doctor or a dentist.
They fools can't teach us shit, my people need freedom. We trying to get all we can get. All my high school teachers could suck my dick, telling me white man lies, straight bullshit. They fools can't teach us shit, my people need freedom. We trying to get all we can get. All my high school teachers could suck my dick, telling me white man lies, straight bullshit. Bullshit.
can suck my dick. Bitch!
Well, black power, black power, black power. You're listening to the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense nightly broadcast. Tonight, brothers and sisters, we are coming to you live from the belly of the beast here in America, KKK. Sending a special shout-out and salute to all of our beautiful brothers and sisters in the many countries in the mother continent of Africa who are listening to tonight's broadcast as we see the switchboards lighting up all across the globe. We know it's late night in Africa, and for those of you who are listening, we thank you for your continued support. Sending a shout out and salute to the brothers and sisters in South America, Central America, and the Caribbean Islands, in the UK, Canada, and all across the globe. But last, and certainly not least, to the brothers and sisters here in the belly of the beast, in America, KKK, we thank you for your continued support of the new Black Panther Party radio show and all of the efforts of the brothers and sisters who bring forth such powerful programming here on tonight, as well as every night, as this is the radio station for the people. Well, brothers and sisters, as you know, every Tuesday night, we have a very special guest host, Brother Tutmos Sankara, who brings us the Akibalon World News. And as promised last week, we have a very special and powerful guest tonight. We have Brother Rakeem Balogun, and this subject that the comrades put forth is countering COINTELPRO in New Africa. So without further ado, I want to do a quick mic check as I pass the mic. We do have Brother Tutmos on, and we also have Brother Rakeem on, and we have our National Minister of Culture on as well, Brother Greg out of New Jersey, who came on board. I don't know what's going on with this switchboard. So let me get a mic check. Mic check, mic check. Brother Tutmos, can you hear me? Oh, wow, that's Brother Greg's daughter. She had to set it off. Set it off, young princess. One more time. There we go, there we go. You know, the children will lead the way. Now we got the right energy going. Brother, the queen, young princess, has set the energy off. Let's get that mic check from you, Brother Tutmos. Brother Tutmos, can you hear me?
Black power. Black power, African family.
All right, black power. Let's get a mic check from Rakeem, Brother Rakeem.
Yo, peace and power, peace and power.
Peace and power, black power. All right. Well, I'm going to yield. I'm going to pass the mic to our host, Tutmos Sankara, our special guest. Y'all have the floor tonight. Just let me know when y'all want to bring in any other callers. But as it stands, I'm passing the mic. Black power.
Black power, queen. Thank you very much. And thank you to the new Black Panther Party under the leadership of comrade, sister, and Crystal Muhammad. And welcome, family, to the Akibalon News Show. I'm your host and your combat reporter, Brother Tutmos Sankara, here live with you also and also on New Black Panther Party Radio as we have inaugurated this very politically focused news channel with the help of the party, the Cubs of Khalid Muhammad, as is only proper. And this evening, I'm very excited because this is something I've been trying to do for a long time. And you know it, Brother Rakeem, by being an experienced activist, you see people across the nation and across the globe. And in the position I'm in, you know, sometimes some people you just have to reach out directly to and just say, hey, this who I am. What's up with you, comrade? And build a relationship. And so I knew that I had to do that. And one thing I wanted to ask you, Brother Rakeem, as we open up, have you ever heard that song, Death to White Supremacy, by Brother Shout?
Most definitely. You know, that's definitely my comrade. I I remember when, you know, when he was creating that song. So, yes, I definitely know that song very well.
Yes, yes, and just to share with the community, during that song, Brother Short is actually, like, reciting. He's so awesome, Brother Short. Is just a dynamic African. And in this song, he was actually rapping the lyrics of what occurred during an activist event in Dallas, Texas. And what it was the crackers, their crackers, called, they said, were going to come to the mosque down there, and the community organized itself. And there were particular leaders who, and people from the community who stepped forward to the front. And yourself, having been one, Brother Short crystallized this in the song, in the lyrics. He's like, you know, Africans here organized during this time, and it's here with the Huey P. Newton Gun Club throwing guns up in the air. And that was so pivotal to me, because you remember, Sister Crystal, I was down there that weekend, right? I just happened to be, because it was the anniversary weekend too, remember, from the party. And I remember people were doing, the ARs were going up in the air. And so he crystallized that event in the song. He mentioned other comrades. And
that was
so
a different day, though. That was in April. That was when we was in front of the bear, I think. We were talking about the bear demonstration in April. Am I correct, Joaquin?
Yes. Crystal. Yes.
April 2016.
And shout out to Brother Short, you know. But actually, remember, we had two different dates. The first date, remember, was the no-show. And then 2 weeks later was the date that they actually showed up, escorted by law enforcement.
That's right. We were there both times, ran them crackers out. That's right, Black Power.
So it's a possibility that, you know, he was there one of those days, you know.
Right, because it was two times. It was. I remember that. And so I said to myself, when I listened to Brother Short's song, I was like, yo, this dude is actually rapping about what actually happened while they were down there and that activity was being carried out. And so for me, realizing that the second time how they were escorted, and among many different operations how those who find themselves in opposition to new African freedom fighters find themselves under the escort of the authorities. Sister Crystal was here in Atlanta in 2016 when the Ku Klux Klan was up on Stone Mountain, and we went at them. And they flew the leaders out on helicopters, and the majority of them, they drove out on prison buses. But there was one group that tried to walk out. And, you know, they got whooped up pretty good trying to get up out of there. And so that is what we want to focus on as we bring information about, because those who are focused activists already know and understand what happened with our people, with the Black Panther Party, and all the way back to Marcus Garvey in regards to the FBI and their operations against us. What we want to do this evening is kind of bring you up to speed from that history coming forward to today, and showing how this today's activists need to carry themselves out as they go about operations in the community with a focused mind and with the proper strategy. And we'll go from the continent back to New Africa and all around, from Jaleel Musa King to Kwame Nkrumah, and to begin the COINTELPRO papers, to open up the platform to my comrade, right, Rakim. Like I said in our notes together, from your viewpoint, the African now today struggling in the United States during the pandemic, coming through our history of struggle, what are some key points and strategies that need to be focused on by our youth and older activists in the community now?
Well, I'm glad that
you asked me that. You know, I think that our key point moving forward from, you know, especially from 2022, because this year is pretty much over with, but 2022 and moving on is, you know, we have to diversify our talent and just our movement as a whole. We have to find ways to get in spaces where we currently are not at, because, you know, as we understand with dialectical materialism, things are constantly changing and things are constantly involved, especially, you know, moving forward. You know, we have a lot of things that are changing politically, technology-wise, and things of that nature. And we have to be able to change. And I believe that as a real revolutionary, our responsibility is to be like water, like what Bruce Lee say. You know, be able to take any form that needs to be taken, as well as being a lifelong student. And for the youth, we know that our youth, we will not be able to influence them hanging out at the parks, passing out bottle waters and apples like we did within the last 50 years. We will have to influence them in areas that they will be at, as far as, you know, social media and even the new innovations of social media, such as the metaverse, and meet them in ways. And I believe that we have to be more innovative in our mutual aid program that we have. You know, one of the things we saw within the pandemic within our community is that financial literacy is almost like an epidemic amongst us. You know, a lot of people, we know a lot of people, you know, 3-4 years ago did not have a portfolio or did not have as many assets as people in our community do today. And so that's another thing that we have to do, is empower people in our community to empower themselves. And because first we have to empower ourselves as individually, financially, in other ways, but just particularly financially, what I'm referencing now, before we're able to power our community, you know, financially. And, you know, we know from the last 10 years that we've seen comrades, you know, come under cases, truly, from, you know, law enforcement, as well as lack of, you know, financial stability as a whole. And we have to find ways to, you know, institutionalize and stabilize our movement, you know. And so we have to be able to, you know, teach our people that. So moving forward, it's going to require a lot of skills. You know, it's going to require a lot of technological skills, a lot of financial skills, as well as social skills. And, you know, I believe we also need to really focus on incorporating a strong mental health element to our movement for the workers as well as for the people. Because no matter, you know, we all have great intentions, and our hearts are pure, but understanding, you know, genetic memory and the things I endured being here in the United States of America and just the last 450 years, we have to be able to, so we can be able to be most effective to the community. That was some of the things that I noticed within last 10 years, within not just within myself, but just the movement as a whole. So, you know, those are some of the things that I'm recommending to them.
You're right. You're right. I feel you. It's like while you were speaking, I was just kind of meditating on that. It's like, you know, here we are in this, you know, 21st century, well into the 21st century, and, you know, facing a global crisis, you know, unknown heretofore in the history of, you know, mankind. And it's like the main threat is to humankind, but, of course, us as Africans have to focus on what it is that's closest to us that we have to organize for and defend. But globally and as you said, economically, based upon this global system of white supremacy and its economic, I think on those things a lot too, Conrad, based on that how to counter those things economically from all the way down in the neighborhood, how they market to our children to globally with what we speak about in markets and in bitcoins and cryptocurrencies and things of that nature, from the grassroots up, just like we always organize. I think about those things. So those are things that us organizationally need to continue to focus upon, and as you said, also unify around, because we know that being versus the system of white supremacy, this global economic engine, is going to take every bit that we have to make any kind of, you know, any kind of dinner, to try to make any kind of difference in that. And so, and under imperialism, that those divisions, we talking about money-wise, you know, we talk about fighting with somebody, that's one thing. But we talking about getting money with, you can expand and be a more general with that as an African. Because you can make alliances and things of that nature that will bring about the economic parity, as long as you can have the guarantee that, you know, as African people often do, you ain't going to get jerked in the deal. But moving on to some of...
If I can piggyback...
Yeah, go ahead, comrade. Yes, sir.
I think that what we have to focus on is establishing brick and mortar institutions and the continuance of establishing those institutions to pass to the next generation and to, you know, leave a particular legacy. We can't just leave to the next generation a whole bunch of good memories and videos and pictures that they can find on the metaverse one day. You know, we have to be able to leave something else. You know, and so, one second.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Help out here. Let me back. Let me help out here, because I want to jump in addition to that. And this is something that we talked about when we first linked up in 2011. We not only brick and mortar, but we have to do things that are going to maintain our sustainable living, such as agriculture, building, investing in our community and abroad. You know, we have several people who have come on board that have brought us opportunity about investing not only in the continent, but we have, you know, those individuals who are going in and taking blighted areas in our community and the properties and turn those blighted properties into, you know, affordable housing, things of that nature. Everything that we list in the 10-point platform that we want, we have to make it happen. There's no shape, form, or fashion are we sitting around thinking in our mind we're going to wait on the crack to do it. You know, but top of that list in any society of people, agriculture has to be at the top of that list, because we have to eat every day. And even, like, you know, and other things, energy, you know, renewable energy, like how can we manufacture, you know, the materials for the renewable energy and sell it and, you know, and do import and export, you know, we have access to all of these things, you know. So especially with right now in the motherland, our people are closing off their raw materials to the Europeans. So these are avenues that we got to get into. And we have these are not difficult things to do. So I just wanted to add that to the equation as well, more power.
Yes, you know, I definitely agree with you 100%. And, you know, that was, you know, one of the points I was going to make. You know, we definitely need to be able to have our own means of production as well, no matter if it's food or other resources that we depend on. But, you know, the first step to even acquire those is finances and resources, you know. And so, you know, we have to be able to get access to funding, you know, access to liquidity. We have to be having access to the resources that's needed to be able to establish these institutions, to purchase land, to purchase the bulldozers, to be able to facilitate these things. Because, you know, if, you know, like I said initially, organizing at the park, them days are over with. And the community, you know, with this being a tech society, they're, you know, kids are less and less going to the park as well as adults, you know. And so, you know, we're going to have to, and also with the tech aspect, you know, we have, you know, blockchain technology, which is pretty much from it's crypto end to end, you know, and we can be able to build our own blockchain technology, you know, by programming on the Ethereum or another network to be able to have our own technologies and software to even be able to operate and organize, you know. So these are the things that I'm definitely advocating for, because, you know, just keeping it real, you know, moving, we're not, as you know, organizing, and I'm sure you guys agree, organizing in the last 10 years was not as simple as it was during the 60s. And the next 10 years is really going to be difficult, because we have the attention span of the people. It's becoming shorter and shorter, you know, and people desires and the things that consumes them the most is far away from politics these days, because that's what, you know, the system is pushing them, you know.
Right.
So we got to be able to create content, revolutionary content, with what this is what we're doing now, but even for the next level of media, you know, to where we can be able to get the youth.
Right. And, you know, for what we have to bring to that, Brother Rakim, it's like, for me, my connection to, like, every organizational endeavor that I'm involved with, it's like the elders are there. On one aspect, like dealing with the political prisoners, there's Sekou Odingun, there's Mama Pam Africa, you know. I'm dealing with African Union stuff, Dr. Jeffries and Professor Smalls and, you know, and others. So for me, the way forward is a combination of what we have in that technology aspect that you spoke of that's being introduced, that we, and more so our children, have the advantage of the understanding of, and then the respect of the elders to combine and trust us to take control of that aspect in the community, because a lot of what we have to deal with as far as dealing with economic parity, I mean, come on, y'all. We don't deal with these things. What happens? We get groups. We get a good energy going. You know, get a little bit of bread stacked up and somebody run off with it, or it ain't the right decision. What to do with it ain't made. you know, so one aspect of what it is building the power to the point and using the proper strategies within those efforts where when we do put forth that proper effort towards economic parity, it's not spoiled and squandered. As we've seen in the history of our people, I mean, come on, look, let's go back to history, right? Let's go back to Marcus Garvey, right? Speaking of COINTELPRO and operations, in the book put together by Mama Amy Dot Garvey, Marcus Garvey and the vision of Africa. Even within that, I mean, the one who put 8 million people together. You know, so what you're talking about, Brother Balogun, like putting together that strategy for me, my way I, you know, try to approach and analyze it to go back to the history and then bring it up to where I am and try to cover every step in between. Every organization, every little technical anomaly from the MOVE organization to the Nation of Islam to Marcus Garvey, each and every one, a clear technical analysis of all of the steps from being able to build it up to where it is and then what happened when the traps came and how the crackers destroyed it, you know. And that takes, as you said, the proper political education. So those things have to be put together if they don't exist, you know what I mean? And that, I feel like, is the reason why we're here tonight. You know what I mean? Like bringing that analysis, seeing how what the modern day strategy is, putting together the lessons from history, and then presenting that to our people in a proper manner whereby which they can take that information generally and either join the organizations that's involved with that type of strategy that we're talking about or create one. Concentrate as that mother at the house and build your children up to be the one who could be that leader in that organization, whichever way you are looking to approach it. Our job simply is to present those strategies in a proper and concise manner based on our experience and you know, a proper manner. Not messy it up. You know, we use a few cuss words here and there because, you know, we African people, we speak with emotions, but we're going to be clear and concise and professional in our presentation so that not only, like you said, is not a thing where they're just going to listen to us later on, but that right now when they hear us, they feel our spirit because they know we're giving them the real deal and, you know, we can put them in a direction to be involved in that proper organization that their efforts will be, you know, appreciated. So going forward in that, as we were speaking earlier, as we were saying, because I want to, you know, I'm hosting here, but I want to hear from you, and I want a broad perspective from you. One topic that, if you remember from the list that I sent to us about the activists and their strategies now, the activists now.
Okay.
How do they when they set up the organization like you talk about? It's an economic empowerment one. There might be some sisters, you know. They could be anywhere. They could be in Cleveland. They could be in St. Louis. They can be in Las Vegas. They want to. They trying to put together a platform that's going to bring about that economic empowerment. They want to get together, put their money together. What are the rules so that they protect themselves? First of all, they're proper and legal, and then second of all, they have protection for themselves, and then third of all, they're able to avoid the traps of COINTELPRO and the United States government that seeks to always destroy these type of unified efforts among our people?
Well, I think what's important, you know, moving forward and with activists today is that we're balanced with our approach. You know, as we saw within the last decade, while, you know, advocating for the people and having boots on the ground and being on the front line,
You know, we definitely came under attack in different ways. And you know, thankful, you know, thanks to having, you know, good sisters like, you know, Crystal and other comrades, you know, we've been able to help and free, you know, people who have been locked down, you know. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, Crystal had to work hard, fundraise, and things of that nature. So one of the things we know is we know that COINTELPRO has not went nowhere. And we know that this is something kind of like the coronavirus. This is going to always be with us in one way or another. It may initially starts off as the coronavirus, then mutates to Delta and to other things. It's just a constant mutation, you know. And with COINTELPRO and fascism all together, you know, it's going to always mutate. And so that's something that we have to take in perspective. And I feel that every person who comes in this movement has to accept that and be prepared for that, unfortunately. You know, just like you said in your point, you know, dating back to, you know, Marcus Garvey, you know, this is something that he had to deal with. Marcus Garvey was a businessman, and the FBI hit him with a mail fraud case to one, be able to seize his assets, discredit his name, you know, pretty much, you know, in so many words, the FBI was telling the black community that he was a scammer, you know, and created that image of him being a scammer and having him, you know, kicked out the country. And so these are things we have to be prepared for mentally and financially. And we have to have committees that are focused on these things, that are focused on law, and that can have the right network if there has to be a fundraiser for bail or attorney fees. You don't have to have a sister like Crystal, you know, busting her chops to try to, you know, save people and get them out of jail, you know.
Right.
We can have something on standby that can be able to provide relief immediately, you know.
You're right. And I want to make two points. Number one, yourself and myself have benefited from the revolutionary efforts of Sister Crystal Muhammad to bring about our liberations. You before and myself more recently, last year, which I just celebrated a year of liberation on November the 19th. From that effort.
The year previous.
Right. Yes.
Yeah,
so, yes, ma'am. Go ahead. So
it was myself as well as the comrades of the New Black Panther Party. I got to say, I have not been able to do anything of myself, just myself, although I'm definitely spearheading. But, it's been a lot of support from our central committee and the rank and file brothers and sisters. And that's a big part of organizing, is the communalism part of it. You know, we really work in the spirit of collective work and effort, although we do have rank and file for accountability. And I'm the most visible or vocal person on the ground, but we do have a very powerful central committee. And, you know, I want to add, before Rakim got kidnapped, we had our national field marshal was kidnapped as well, Brother Sharif. So you guys are hitting it on the nail as far as putting in place the fund for legal work and also we have to be, you know, I've come under direct attack and targeted, you know, for the work that we've done. Right. You know, there are individuals who have made it a point over this last couple of years, externally and most recently internally, to try to attack me personally because of the work that we've done, and, you know, in regards to not only fighting for justice, but advocating for brothers and sisters like yourself, Tutmos and Rakim. When you come under a target, have been targeted and locked up, you know, and that's something that we got to deal with, that, you know, why are Negroes so busy trying to easily accessible or so willing to be the catalyst of destroying other brothers and sisters? Just like we have, this is something we got to look at about even like what's going on with the neo-colonialists. This neo-colonialist mindset doing the work of the white man. But yeah, that's my part on that. I'm going to fall back a little bit.
I wanted to go in that too. That's a good point. That's a good point because what you're talking about, so I'm looking at your point, what you propose, and we look at the Garvey strategy, right? Like you said before. What are some of the points, what are some of the ways, in your opinion, you think that we could secure ourselves building this organization from the ground with this economic, political, and cultural power, whereby which we can avoid the traps that have ensnared us historically and recently?
Are you talking about Rakim or myself?
I'm talking about Rakim.
Okay. Well, I think that, you know, I think one of the, you know, I made a post on Facebook this weekend specifying what I was saying earlier about diversifying the movement. And one of the things that that I mentioned was that we're too over allocated into like militants. You know, I feel like since 2016, it just seems like, you know, everybody who's coming into this movement, you know, is taking the lead on being a soldier, which is great, right? But unfortunately, we have to accept, look at the people who are boots on the ground now and understand that this is what we got, you know, at this moment. And we have to look at what we got and then re-strategize, like, is everybody going to be a gun instructor? You know, because we need people, and there's nothing wrong with that. Shout out to all my organizers who are teaching the people how to defend themselves, and that is needed. But we need
every single individual needs to know how to defend themselves, and they should have gun training. I don't care if you a nanny, that all you do is sit at the house with the children. You know,
okay.
So that goes for everyone.
So. Let me tell you my experience from being in the military, okay? Being in the Marines.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Now, when I initially joined the Marines, you know, I had to go to boot camp 13 weeks in the Marine Corps boot camp, you know, and where you learn the basics of military, the history. That will be what we consider political education in the movement. You learn how to defend yourself. You learn how to keep yourself in shape. You know, you learn how to survive and things of that nature. You learn discipline. Okay, then the next thing you learn is how to be a rifleman. And so, and that's required. Everybody has to be able to shoot to a certain extent, be able to identify targets, be able to provide first aid and things of that nature. Every Marine is a rifleman. I don't care what your job is. You're a rifleman. And any Marine would tell you, there's been cooks who have been deployed to cook in Iraq and found themselves, you know, standing guard or fighting in convoys or may even line up at the door
Because you have to, sometimes you lose bodies, you got to get somebody to fill in, you know.
Right.
Because that's a very important, sometimes roles are very important, certain points we have to hold. So after School of Infantry, then you go to your MOS, Military Occupational Specialty School, to be whatever you meant to be. So, you know, you have like 10% of the military is going to be infantry, but the rest is going to be a whole bunch of support roles. Because the Marine Corps infantry by itself and functioning by itself, like, can you imagine the Marine Corps infantry without no funding or without adequate communication?
Drivers,
if we can't use a satellite phone in Ramadi to communicate with people on Navy ships to call for a naval fire, you know what I'm saying? We're not as effective. So, you know, back to what I was saying is that I think we're over allocating militancy. Militancy should be the first step of this movement. Everybody has to know how to defend themselves. I don't care what you're doing, even if you're just the cook for the breakfast program. We saw how the COINTELPRO was gunning them down in the 60s and the 70s. You know, and so, but at the same time, everybody just can't be a militant on standby, ready for something to jump off. We need people who can fundraise and constantly fundraise and focus on fundraising. You know, we need people that can find ways to try to get us in places and avenues where we're not at. You know, so this is what I mean for, you know, diversifying the movement, for, you know, finding people with great skill set, and even if they don't have skill set, be willing to teach ourselves the skill set so we can be able to teach others moving forward. That's something that's very imperative, and it's something that we have to do.
Absolutely.
Can I chime in for 1 second?
Who is it, Brother Greg?
Yes, it is. Black power. You know,
my brother. Black power. Black power, you know, my brother. Absolutely.
Black power. I'm glad you really explained it and broke it down that way, Rakim, because that goes right along with something I always say, and your explanation really just laid it out there. You know, everyone can't do everything, but everyone can do something. And the main reason why I've always said that was primarily because, you know, it's easy for a lot of people to fall in the direction of one talent or skill. I've just used those two words, you know, for lack of better words. But it's very easy for a lot of individuals to fall in that direction. And just as you said, everyone is not either capable, knowledgeable, or built for certain things in certain positions. And if one finds themselves trying to step into a position or taking on responsibilities that might be a little too much for them, there is that possibility of their talents and skills that they're excellent at won't be utilized effectively. So I'm glad you really broke it down that way. Yes, I think we're all on the same accord in saying that, yes, everyone needs to know and have the basics of firearms and self-defense and protecting oneself. I think it's very safe to say that everyone on the line right now, and most likely everyone who's listening across the globe, can cook. But we don't need hundreds of thousands of cooks. However, if your skill and your talent falls more on teaching individuals finances and self-defense, if that cook falls down or falls short, of course someone can step in. But I just use that as, you know, just a basic, you know, example just to make that point again. that it's excellent the way you broke it down, that there are things that everyone needs to be capable and knowledgeable of doing. But if those who are more experienced and better equipped at running or leading in those specific areas, then, you know, we just need to, you know, step aside and let them do their thing, and everyone else, so all of us need to just stay in our own lane, you know, per se. Black power.
Black power. Absolutely. And what I want to do right now, Rakim, is like give in regards to what it is that we are talking about, these rules, which I will bring forward. I know that you will understand that go pertinently with what it is that we're talking about, because in order to bring forth what it is that we're talking about, it's going to take absolute discipline. And so I often read from combat liberalism, as I know you do, from Mao Zedong, September 7th in 1937. And I won't go through all of them, but I will point out a couple of specific ones. To be among the masses and fail to conduct propaganda and agitation or speak at meetings or conduct investigations and inquiries among them, and instead to be indifferent to them and show no concern for their well-being, forgetting that one is a socialist and behaving as if one were an ordinary non-socialist. That is a seventh type. To see someone harming the interests of the masses and yet not feel indignant or dissuade or stop him or reason with him, but to allow him to continue. This is the eighth type. To work half-heartedly without a definite plan or direction, to work perfunctorily and muddle along. Quote, so long as one remains a monk, one goes on tolling the bell. This is the ninth type. To regard oneself as having rendered great service to the revolution, to pride oneself on being a veteran, to disdain minor assignments while being quite unequal to major tasks, to be slipshod in work and slack in study. This is a tenth type. To be aware of one's own mistakes and yet make no attempt to correct them, taking a liberal attitude towards oneself. This is an 11th type. So to build what we have to build, I feel like we have to start at a point of discipline where if we're who we are, Brother Rakim, you know, we lay it out. It's on paper. We hit the ground. We push it forward in union with our revolutionary organization, with Sister Crystal and the rest of the comrades. And then we put that before the people, that National Black United Front, and we push it at them. And then their response is what it is. And we can look at each other after that and say, okay, the people over here, they rocking like this. They with it. The people over there, oh, I thought they was going to get down, but they ain't. But until then, until that point where that national agenda is there, whoever is the or whatever organization is the impetus for it and has the proper aims and objectives for their platform, then we'll rock with them. But until that is there, what we're talking about, when I was listening to you, Rakim, I got to go look at myself in the mirror tonight, because what Rakim's saying right now is like, I got to say it to myself. Like, bro, what is it that, you know, and I work in organizations, but what you're saying and what we're talking about based upon that building, that economic structure, those things made me even question myself, you know. But you know as well as I do that anything that's pertinent is going to have to be built on a concrete foundation of organization. So that's why I wanted to bring forth that combat liberalism at that time.
And I'm glad you did, comrade. GMF, that's something that combat liberalism and the teachings of Mao Zedong is
something that we study very consistently. And
shout out to Comrade Chairman Coffrey.
Yes, sir. And, you know, combat liberalism, I believe that, you know, if I believe that if all our organizations really study that and live by it, you know, I think that we will be more productive and progressive today. And also, I do, going back to, you know, what we was mentioning before is that when it comes to, you know, diversifying, I think another great thing is what benefit it also offers is that, you know, just my experience, you know, the last 10 years was my first 10 years. You know, I know both of you guys have been doing this longer than me. And I'm definitely, you know, a junior to you guys and, you know, experience, you know, and just to be clear, I'm definitely honored to be, you know, on the line with you guys and to have this conversation. But within my last 10 years, I felt like with you have so many groups kind of doing the same thing, it creates a very unhealthy, competitive, just, you know, it just creates a very unhealthy relationship and things are a little bit more competitive than supportive. And if by finding voids in the movement, I feel that we can be able to support each other more and the things that everybody do the best. You know what I mean?
And, right.
And so also, you know, when I reference the mental health, you know, it's like this. Let's just keep it real. You know, one thing that I'm embarking on is being more transparent. Okay? And let's just keep it real. Everybody, and we all allow our egos to get to the best of us at times. I would tell you that historically I have done that. You know what
yes,
I'm saying?
Sir. Yes,
and
sir.
It have hurted progress, the movement, things of that nature. And
yes,
others
sir.
Have done it as well.
I have too.
You know? And so the mental health aspect of being able to have subject matter experts and to be able to recruit people in our movement, especially the leaders. The leaders need the most mental health attention and development. I feel that leaders should seek more counsel because your goal is to be the best product that you can be. And to be the best product, it's not a convenient journey. It's not going to be something where it's just all pats on the back and you just go and be successful. That means that you have to look at yourself, identify things, and then try to work those things.
Absolutely,
you know,
my brother. Yeah, for real. And yeah, you absolutely right. Like I said, I agree absolutely with you. I think back to things. There's one thing, right? When I first joined the New Black Panther Party in November of 2000, I had just came back from Cuba, and I had the opportunity to work with them in Angola. And so I came back, and I met Dr. Carla. I was like, I want to be the Minister of Defense, right? And he kind of laughed at me out the side of his head. He kind of looked at me out the corner of his eye, right? Dr. Carla was so powerful. And then he said, no, my brother, you're going to be my Minister of Education. You're going to teach the people what your experience was. And through that, that's the best position for you to be in, right? And, of course, I accepted it. And I still got the folder today where he wrote my name on it. right? Lieutenant Tutmos, Minister of Education. So even I have to think back to myself that, oh, my God, even with Dr. Collin, I was impetuous. I'm trying to tell Dr. Collin what I want to be in the organization when I come in, right? It's like, oh, my God, Tutmos. But in regards to having that discipline and going forward, those things, combat liberalism, on contradiction, those things, you sit down as comrades and go over them.
Yep.
That's where you start
have
building.
Face,
that's what you call FOCO.
Certain things with combat liberalism. That's one
right.
of the beautiful
oh.
things about it, that you have to face certain things. And it's not going to be convenient. It's going to make you vulnerable to others and yourself, and it's going to make others vulnerable to you and others. You know what I mean? But that right there, you know, going through those experiences and with great intentions, let's establish principle unity, and it established a lot of synergy, you know, within the movement.
Right,
you know,
and without doing those things, without having that humility, you won't develop the. Without having that humility, that's the thing about Malcolm, and I want to transition into that, because I definitely want us to pay honor and respect to the spirit of our sister who transitioned on yesterday under very mysterious circumstances. And I was informed
okay.
yesterday by Professor Smalls. Sister Crystal. After speaking to her, informed me that Professor Smalls had requested that I call him, and I did, and I got that information at that time. And coming from him, knowing his legacy of organizational experience in the OAAU, you know, I'm connecting right to the joint. You know what I mean? And I broke down, like, really, like a little crystal. It's like that hurt me a lot, because when I read the articles and I saw, well, no, not when I read the articles and I saw, when Professor Small said it to me, he just said, just follow the words, they got to her. And then after that, he said, now you got to go do the research. And I did. And it's clear. This COINTELPRO, this how they do. It's not no coincidence that a week after the – no, not a week. A
Less
few
than
days.
A few days.
A few days. 2-3 days after those brothers were exonerated who were not guilty for his death, his daughter transitioned, just found dead in her apartment. And so I just felt like it within myself – that Professor Smalls, you know, when you said it, you know, and I called him and I talked to him, I said, oh, man, after I finished getting over myself, I said, I really appreciated that, brother, for recognizing me in that moment. And that's one of those things sometimes in that responsibility of history that you recognize, but definitely honor to the spirit of us, Sister Twin. Whenever I've seen him, which I've seen him on several occasions, it's like, Sister Twin, I know it's one of them. I know it's Malika or Malika, but who could tell? You know, like, they're the twins. So we all go through that stuff, but having the opportunity to meet both of those sisters and through the work of the African Union and NYDU, because I came to work for so Brother Rakim, right? You said everybody mm-hmm. can't be the soldier, right?
Correct.
So I decided at a point of organization that what was going forward with the African Union was a part of Malcolm's work. And so I latched on to it with Elambe Broff and Dell Jones and James Smalls and Dr. Jeffries and Shelby Lewis and Joyce King and all these great elders, right?
Asa Hilliard, you know, the scholars of the Pan-African movement. So it was like, huh, Tutmos, what do? You're a gun guy, right? You're a country dude from Central Florida, grew up in the swamp. That's what you do. That's your foundation. But I think you probably need to just you was always a smart dude too, though. You know, they called you the professor. So just, you know, you might need to just put your little gun down a little bit and just go over here and this stuff, read them, you know, study all them books they be talking about what you're supposed to read, and then go in there and see, you know, if your mind can, you know, you try to use your mind, don't use your gun so much. You know, I went through that process, you know, and that ended up being the organizational work I ended up sticking to, you know. So even Sister Crystal sometimes, like, but it's that, hey, we got a demonstration going on. And I'm like, okay, I'll report on it, even though I know my heart, I want to, you know what I want to do. But like you said, some people have to pick positions, and everybody can't be that. And you have to feel in your heart where you can feel in that position and give that to the community, even though it might not be what you really actually want to do. But you realize there might not be other people who can do it. And so that discipline in organization, like you said, is what we're going to have to bring forward. Before we get out of here, comrade, I definitely want you to chime in on, based on your experience as a focused activist and an armed activist, on the verdict of this Rittenhouse boy up here. From the perspective of a new African, from the perspective of an experienced, like I said, armed activist, what is your response to this verdict?
Well, there's really not that much of a response. You know, this is something that I expected, you know, even though that it is not something that I definitely agree with. This is something I expected, once again, a privilege, white privilege. And when we see this, we get to see how a first-class citizen is treated by the judicial system. You know, he was treated as a first-class citizen, you know, and...
Right.
You know, they looked at the facts of the case. They only allowed things to be a part of discovery that they felt like it was relevant. You know, and they allowed themselves to see things from his perspective. You know, unfortunately, as black people, when we go through the court system, we don't get that treatment unless, you know, we have attained a six-figure attorney. You know,
right.
We know not to expect that, you know, and for the simple fact that in reference to his character, that particular video footage with him attacking a young girl was not allowed in court as a way to reflect on his temperament. You know, it's definitely something where it's straight up privilege, because when we go to court, they pull out everything that they can find on you, from your credit. You know, I don't care if you don't have a criminal history. They're going to find every check that bounced.
Yep.
They're going to mention it. They're going to mention it. Yeah, he's habitual check writer, which is whoop-de-whoop that, you know, his bank account went negligent numerous times. He jumped around from different banks.
He has a whole bunch of unpaid.
This is what struck me as different about this case, right?
Right.
I said, oh my God. Okay, Charlottesville, when the white supremacist ran over the white girl and killed her, right?
Right.
That was one. I said, okay, what they gonna do? Oh, they ain't do nothing to the cracker. He ran over a white girl. She was the only one died. Right? So there are these pivotal moments where you have to understand politically that white supremacy will even sacrifice its own, and that's what they did with Rittenhouse. Because the brother went ran up there and grabbed that gun from that boy. He shot the white boys, right?
Right.
You know what the sequence of events, right, in the Rittenhouse case. He's walking down the street. He intimidating all the other different people. He shoot the other two white boys, and then the brother run up to him and grab the joint from him. That's what stopped him. Right? They didn't even let that dude in the case. They didn't even want to put that part in the case. Like you said, by the other part, by him intimidating the young girl. So definitely privileged. But to me, you know, I my mind messed up. Crystal know it. She know, like, she be like, tell me she crazy. I want them to let him off. I want them to let the white boys off in Brunswick. I mean, Ahmad, the only way Ahmad is going to get avenged, the only way Ahmad is going to get avenged is some white blood in the soil. Only thing I'm thinking about is how to get to it the quickest. So if they let them, if they send them to jail, they're just going to go there for a little while and then go and live their lives with some money and all the crack going to donate to them and honor them as heroes. I want to let them off. So Africans can know that white supremacy ain't playing with you. You could just be walking, jogging around and inquiring into how homes are built, you know, and these crackers would just pull over, chase you down, and kill you. So the honor of being an African and being an organizer and having the experience of analyzing these events. To me, in my heart, there's no reason why we should ever hold back any anger or angst about what has happened to us within this system. But to be, as you said, my comrade, those focused Africans, as we go on discussing COINTELPRO in New Africa, and its effect in our organizations. Personally, I want to mention Brother H. Rap Brown, Brother Kamal Siddiqui, shout out to Baba Matulu, Ronda Bowers, all the comrades behind enemy lines, and peace and power to those comrades who've been able to be liberated, most recently, Jaleel Musa King, comrades. Hey, look. We on the roll. I was on the other on the political prisoner line. We on the roll. We got to move all the move organizers out, except for, of course, Mumia. We got Jaleel Musa King home, and he organized it back with a Sekou is home, you know. So it's like we have to look at our victories too, Rakim, and we have to understand that there's no way we're going to find a way forward without going back to those comrades who gave their effort on the ground and that's back here with us now. You know, if you looking back at history, if you looking back at history and you really trying to be a technical revolution, you're trying to be by the book, right? You sit down and say, well, damn, I read that book about Samora Machel back in Mozambique back in the 60s, but like, who is the dude, like, the closest to me now that's like that? And you might find Mukasa, or you might find Sekou, or you might find Mama Pam. You know? And then those revolutionaries, with that experience of those people, you have to accumulate them before you even get put your effort out there, right, as new Africans coming in that next generation of struggle. You got to have the proper strategy and the proper accumulation of the events that occur before you so that you are able to not only, okay, you know, like to avoid the traps and all that, what we're talking about, COINTELPRO, but just to listen and receive the energy of, receive the blessing of the elders, the revolutionary elders before you. That is proper. And that's what we a lot of times be missing, Brother Rakim, because dudes can pop up and come from nowhere. We don't know who they is. They ain't come from no organization we know of. You know, there's somebody that all of a sudden we see on social media, and then a bunch of people be running down to them because they got guns like you see it, and they present a good program, you know. And we got to learn to stop going for them tricks, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think, moving forward, we just, you know, we have to just focus on principle unity, you know, and we can't unify based off of personality, but we have to unify based off of things that we agree on, you know.
Right.
And I think that's proper, you know, organizing, just like Conrad Stokely Carmichael said, Kwame Ture, he said that we have to, you know, figure out better ways to get organized, because if we're organized as a collective, then things like that are not happening. You know what I mean? But we're not. We have, you know, people all over the place doing different things and not being transparent, not communicating across the board, things of that nature. So that makes us vulnerable to opportunists and agent provocateurs and things of that nature. And just like Kwame Ture said, he said in the 60s, the biggest problem of the 60s is that they was mobilized, but they was not organized. And this is, you know, and I think that is the result of that, of being mobilized and not organized, because when you're organized, you know, new faces can't come and be able to just make the movement very vulnerable, you know. And you know, that was a scary moment, you know, when you see the movement, you know, just split in half just because a new sensational figure come on the scene. You know, that showed how vulnerable we are, and it showed how we have to go back to the drawing board. We have to look at things, look at this, and really analyze it and see what we learned from this as a collective. So moving forward, we won't be falling for this 2 years later.
You're right. And that's going to call for us being able to sit at a table, say that this united front that we're calling, there's going to be one person that's going to be the chair. There may be two people. There may be co-chairs, right? And then we're going to pick the most intelligent people to be in it that we trust, and we ain't going to argue about it. To do that, that's what it's going to take, the organizational ladder, that hierarchy, you know, within what we already been talking about, that organization that will be able to be established, that will not just focus on the armed struggle, that will focus on economic dependence, independence, and spreading the culture of our people among the masses, right? That's what we're talking about, Brother Rakim, right?
Correct, you know.
So from the foundation, building it up from there, as I said before, those rules, in what spirit is it set? Is it going to be a purely economic organization, or is it going to be, like we said, based on those rules of combat liberalism and that socialist aspect of things,
as we establish New Africa as a independent nation among nations in the world. We got a whole lot of fountains we can draw from, but New Africa itself is still in that, you know, we can, like you said just a minute ago, and I wanted to comment about that too, about Brother Kwame Ture. And in that speech, which is called Converting the Unconscious to Conscious. If the family that is out there listening want to study and follow up what Brother Rakim was just speaking of, from Brother Kwame Ture's speech on YouTube, Converting the Unconscious to Conscious. That's our job. That's it. That's what we're doing. But the unconscious won't come to conscious if the conscious does not have integrity. When they see that little mess.
Integrity or unity.
Or unity. If they don't defend each other.
I think a lot of the unconscious, they look at it like, I have enough drama in my life. Why would I get involved with this drama?
Yeah, but all you do all day long is watch The Real Housewives. So you want drama in your life. You just don't want it to be in your life. You just want to watch it and be entertained by it. But you don't want to give your focused effort towards it and your energy and your resources based on the real effort of liberation of African people. We're entertainment-based people. We've lost that community focus, you know. That's just it. That's what it is about the African in the United States. I mean, come on, this thing been analyzed all around the world. Those of us who work in the organizations and have been for years understand that and what it is and try to find the strategies to counter that. That's what Kwame is talking about, converting the unconscious to conscious. That's our job.
Yes, what? Can I chime in right quick? I apologize. I had to click over.
Yes, ma'am. It's okay.
I clicked over. Let me tell y'all how the ancestors are working. I clicked over and y'all didn't know it because I didn't want to interrupt the broadcast, but Sarnetta was calling, and he was calling right when you were talking about the Queen, Malcolm X's daughter transitioning, and you were saying how you were reaching out to Papa Smalls. So I clicked over because he was live on the air, and he wanted my comment, and I mentioned he was asking, did we know about the funeral arrangements and all that? And I said no, but I know one person who probably is going to be the best one, and Baba Smalls. And he was like, yeah, we got to. He was like, yeah, I'm glad you said that, you know. But I'm like, dang, he's way up in New York, you're way in Atlanta, Joaquin's way in Dallas, I'm way here in Houston, Greg's in New Jersey, but we're all having the same thought in the same moment. And the spirit of Malcolm is here. And we, and you know, we...
The spirit of Malcolm is here.
I'm having chills. I'm having chills, man. You know, we can be a revolutionary.
Last night, I broke down. I broke the hell down. I don't know how. I've never done that before. But I know Malcolm. You know, I met her and her sister, the twins. You can't, it's like hard to tell both of them apart. But her, she's the one that is the more vivacious one. So they do things collectively, and like we already said, it's no coincidence that a couple of days after those boys get exonerated, that sister is found in the apartment like that.
I brought that point up, and I'm getting chills because when we say the ancestors are here, we can say specifically we know which ancestor is here right now. It's Malcolm that's moving us right now at this moment. Malcolm is moving through all of us. And I know for a fact, I came into consciousness because of Malcolm. That was the catalyst for most of us, for many of us. You know, some of the younger generation might have been Khaled, but Khaled helped to sharpen it. But Malcolm was who woke us up, for many of us. I'll speak for myself. And
Malcolm,
this is
the
tragedy for
the
black nation.
Malcolm developed the concepts that made the Nation of Islam
organization that would relate to the everyday, ordinary African in the streets in the United States. He created that. Until he joined
right.
it, you couldn't go out there and fix it like you could and get the brother off the block. He did it because where he
well,
came from.
Well, I don't
want
to say that either. I don't want to say that because what we have to be, I got to get to this part because this is what we go through, and I got to hammer this on. We have too much competition. We have too much. I'm the head in the plantation going on, and everyone was relevant. There, you know, it's like a continuation. Had not the work of Elijah, there would not be the work of Malcolm. Had not the work of Malcolm, there would not be, you know, Farrakhan. Had not been Farrakhan, Dr. Collar. Had not Farrakhan, Huey. All of these arms, all of these soldiers, all these freedom fighters. Because you know what? It's millions of black people, but it's always only a handful of us doing the work. And we can't afford. We can't afford in this day and time because you know what? These crackers are united in white supremacy so deep, regardless of what they're going through behind doors. But when they come public, they show you the fucking fangs and they fucking dirty, funky, white-ass teeth. And they stick united, gritted with that. And that's what we have to do because, man, this is a tragedy. I met his grandson. He wasn't even supposed to be at the program. When they went to war in Libya, we had the Sister McKinney come, and his grandson showed up. He wasn't even playing, and he spoke about what happened and the different things he was going through. But he was talking about Libya, and he had been to Israel, and he was talking about his own personal evolution, I guess, and. Yo, what the children of the movement go through, what those of us who are in this movement decades go through. And people sometimes talk about, you know, the Panthers and the 60s and 70s. And that's perfect is we learn from that. But here we are living this right now. We are living the scandal being trying to be put on our names, people trying to kill us, being shot at by the police, having comrades locked up. Our lives are literally on the line. And we can theorize all day long, but basic stuff must be done. We got to be able to feed ourselves. We got to be able to defend ourselves. We got to be able to fund the movement. We got to be able, it says somewhere in one of them scriptures, we even have to be able to mourn decently. We have to be on a battlefield, report the news, and motherfuckers have nerve enough to be trying to pick the few of us who are doing the work apart. We have to call out the sellout. Let it be known. I think you said it or somebody said it. It's so much running into me right now. But nobody's going to be held accountable for what happened to Malcolm. I don't think so. Not on our watch. Did they kill her or did she die from a broken heart? Everything's on the table. Everything's on the table. Black power.
Black power. You have a response, Brother Rakim?
No. Well, yes, I do. First and foremost.
Come on, give it to me. Come on, give it to me. I'm looking for you. Hey, look, I'm on the show, but, hey, I've been waiting to hear from you. So, the legacy of Malcolm is something that we all hold very near and sincere. And for me personally, it's like that was what I moved myself to as far as organizational work, moving and working with the African Union. And so to lose his seed to me represents a strike against the royal house of the new Africans in the United States. And my spirit tells me it was absolutely nefarious. So, like
well,
I said, I want to turn the floor over to you and get your response to it.
Well, you know, just
first and foremost, I want to say rest in power, peace, and prosperity for the queen. You know, this, you know, unfortunately, it happened at a time that shocked us all. And we have already heard previous, you know, bad news just about the situation in general. You know, so, you know, rest in peace for Malcolm X's daughter, Malika Shabazz. You know, she was found in Brooklyn, and in our home in Brooklyn. But to be honest, I can't be mad at anybody, you know, but myself, and hold myself responsible. And I mean, accountable, not responsible, but accountable, because I know that I have not reached out to her and provided the support that she needs. And, you know, that's another conversation that we have to have, you know, in the future, is not only providing more consistent support to political prisoners, you know, but also supporting our ancestors, descendants, those who allow us to support them, and be in solidarity with them, you know, because, you know, those of us who have kids, nieces, nephews, little cousins, you know, children that you care about, and especially somebody that you care for or partially care for, you will hope that if something should happen to you, the community will have the best interest for your youth and be able to fill in void. And that's what we hope on our best day. But unfortunately, that's just not the reality. And
right.
But we still have the opportunity, you know, to make that a reality. And, you know, it's definitely a talent, but it's something that, you know, we eventually have to we have to face and deal with. And that kind of goes back to, you know, my original point of diversifying, you know, the focus of the movement.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but that comes with having a plan. Like I was saying also, you got to have something that you're laying out. Then you say, okay, we got enough people in this. Who are we going to put in this position? What is that direct position that we're talking about? That person going to take place in Department of State, technology, whatever it is. And then look at that plan. And that's some work that I've been seeking you continuously fulfilling as part of the work for the African Union. I was given a task of the Job Skills Bank. You know, and I had to get with my car. I couldn't do it by myself, Rakim, you know what I mean? So I had to get with my boys that know, that like run these trips to Africa, right? So I got with them, and I was like, yo, these folks hollering at me about, like, dudes and what they do, what their job is. And then as we got going, some people don't want to tell you what the hell they do. They just traveling to Africa, nigga, right? You know what I mean? So the people that trusted enough that we set up a network with to say, hey, what your job is when you're going to this country, we might be able to let you talk to the government. Then people start actually being able to get jobs over there, right? Just straight up off of that idea, just straight through the organization, you know. And some of them, you know what I mean, like went to the top with the joint. They left 7-8 years ago, now they millionaires, you know. So Pan-Africanism, I want to, you know, before we leave from the platform, I want to just say revolutionary Pan-African socialism, right? Well, we talking about Malcolm. And Malcolm said, the best thing to do is go home. But until we do, we got to have some food, got to have some security. Our children got to be educated, got to have some houses, goddamn, and we got to stop these crackers from killing them, right? So that's the plan, ultimately, overall, if we, in Malcolm's legacy, those are his words, and that's the mantra of the organization, Wadu.
that we work through, repatriation. Get home, build Africa home. That's number one, build Africa home. Everybody ain't ready to go yet. Build Africa first. You build Africa
right.
Home. Go home.
Well, you know,
that's how we get powerful. That's how we deal with what it is that you're saying that we do over here. That is the key. Revolutionary Pan-African socialism.
Well, you know, that puts a question on the table, you know. Do we want to fight the beast at home, or do we want to fight them on their property? You know, on
that's
on,
not a question. It ain't
land.
No question. We gonna do both. We gonna do
right.
both
because we have no choice but to do both. And
we have no choice but to do both.
I'm not. And just to make it clear, I'm not saying that we don't repatriate because I believe in repatriation. But this is just a question that we're just putting on the table for discussion. You know, because even once we go home, we're going to have the immediate fight. Because the neocons are a little bit different than the white men. You know,
let me say this now.
He's not going to give you the space. He's not going to give you the space that the white, that, you know, Greg Abbott gets. Here in Texas, you know what I mean? Like in Kenya, it's mandatory vaccination by December 21st, or you will
oh,
be
yeah.
kicked out of society.
Hey, look, when I go to Africa, bro, when the plane lands, it's going to be above the equator when it lands on the continent. But by the time I get off the plane, it's going to be below the equator. And below the equator, it's a whole nother world from above the equator. That's the best way I can say it to you, bro. I went with the Cubans to Angola. We'll fight South Africans, killing crackers. Over in Zimbabwe, you know what it did, killing crackers, taking the land back. Down south, it's a different story. You just have to look at it from that perspective. That's the best way I can put it in right the few little minutes we got left. You know what I mean? And so we have to go over there and look at it from that perspective. In Namibia, in Zimbabwe, in Mozambique, in some parts of the Congo, Angola, man, bruh, you just have to go there and be with me. We don't take nothing from the crackers down south. That's just how it is. That's why Mugabe is Mugabe. You know, he set the standard. And it's going down now. It's just that the point is we fight wherever we are. Those of us who have the capacity to understand that the fight may be a little bit more economically viable, speaking of economics, right, if we are at home with all the damn diamonds and gold and all that bits of that, then those of us that find ourselves there try to take advantage of that. Don't forget our brothers and sisters back home when we're doing it, too. Send something back, you know. That's the plan. That's how we rock it. Crystal on the plan. She done been home, kicked the wits, Crystal and Carr and them on in down there in South Africa. And, of course, you know the economic and agriculture, as you mentioned, and other projects that are going forward from the new Black Panther Party under her leadership and Black Cross Nurses and all other affiliates. You hear me? So revolutionary Pan-African socialism is the underlying platform that we're working from under. If we're in Babylon, we fight. We're on the continent, we fight. And wherever place we at, we're getting together to put the plan and the solution for that future liberation to occur. And so it's like continuous. And, you know, something you mentioned earlier, Brother Rakim, about those children of those liberators, the children of those fighters, right? Lately here, the RBG Music Festival this year, Brother Talib Shakur, Matulu's son, right? He got this car detail business that with the trailer, and on the side of the trailer, he got an LED screen that he can run these videos and pictures through, right? So he's running videos and pictures of his dad and say Cool and Auntie Asada and all this stuff, right? So I'm like, oh my God, who is this guy? So I go over there, and when I saw him, I was like, it's like I'm looking at Matulu. I had never met him before, right?
They just let Marissa Maroon Schultz out on compassionate release. It's just a day-to-day watch, Sister Crystal. I called to try to go, and they're like, we love you, Tud. You know, you can come, you can be in the city, but we can't guarantee we can get you in there. You know? So that's what it is with Russ Maroon. Peace and power to the show family. The liberation of political prisoners, Brother Rakim, is the one thing as African fighters in the United States that make us a government. You can write a constitution until it's accepted by the United Nations and other nations, and you get other signatories and all that. It's not official, right? But you know what you can do? You can try to break in that bitch and get Matulu and then write a letter and say, this is New Africa, and that is our freedom fighter, and we want them free. And we declare that as an act of war against the United States. Automatically, we're a nation. We ain't got to write nobody or else or do none of the rest of that stuff. It's just that act. When they write it up and say, these people, but they here go their names, and this is what they wrote, and they all put their signature on it before they went and did it, that, watch how many people stand behind you then. You have to study the case of Matulu and Sekou when they went in there and got Asada. Study it officially. Study it from the book, the COINTELPRO papers. See what the response of the United States government was. See why they declared those sanctions to be inextricably tied to the continued sanctuary of Asada Shakur in Cuba. See the governmental mechanism entanglements and see politically what it means to be an international revolutionary. See how Mama Nahana, even poor Mama Tussie, how that diplomatic process took place. What was the papers that were signed between them? Now that Mama Nahana is gone, that's why I mentioned her, because her records are open. Mama Asada is still with us, so you can't see that. Study our fighters. Study the women. Study Crystal Muhammad. If you from our community. Of course, I know the other ones. They've been doing it all the time any damn way. Revolutionary Pan-African Socialism. Connecting the revolutionary organizations on the ground from Dallas to Atlanta to Orlando to Baltimore, down to Havana, and then down in Caracas, Venezuela, and then across the over there to Angola, and then Harare, Zimbabwe, you hear me? The groups that are on the ground, they're there. We know they're there in all the places, right? You know, the watch out, the signal. It's, you know, the work laid out for us. And like you said, I'd be sitting back. It's like the minister, Tutmosis Sankara from the African Union Diaspora Office calling. You know, I like it that way. So, Conrad.
Yes, sir.
As we're winding up, we're down to just about 5 minutes. Something we're gonna keep rolling though, because you know, Sister Crystal, where you know she can tell us they stop us sometimes. Sometimes they don't. She can tell us that we still rolling or whatever. But
and this, the words out of my mouth.
Oh, see, I'm getting good at it. I've been practicing, Crystal. I've been practicing, but so as we're winding up, and of course, Black Power. You see that, Rakim?
Black Power, yeah.
That's my theme music. That's my theme music right there.
I got that.
It's actually my ringtone on my phone, too. Yeah, it's my ringtone on my phone. I got it. Thank you, Brother Greg. I appreciate that. I like tripping crackers out, you know, in Walmart
just with my phone just started screaming Black Power in that little girl voice. They're like, who in the hell? They're looking all around and the volume loud too, right?
There you go. No problem. She's been doing that from day one. From day one she's been doing that. So it was just destined to happen to I just told me download a recording app and just record it because Crystal said she was saying it all the time, and man, we got to get that. So I've got to get that.
I needed that, and it's my ringtone now.
Yeah, it just popped into my mind the other day. Like, you know what? Let me just go ahead and just record this. But great show.
I appreciate that.
Nope. Well, you got it. A great show, Rakim, as always. I tell you, how can I say it? If it wasn't for Rakim, Crystal and I, we wouldn't have met the way we had met.
That's right.
It's just the way things fall into place because, you know, when I was reaching out to, get in contact with Rakim around the time, they came and snatched him up. And I remember calling a flyer, a number on the flyer, and I believe it was Brother Robert, if I'm not mistaken, Rakim, that I spoke to. And he, you know, went ahead and put us into contact. And at that time, you know, Minister Brown and we were working on a couple of things up here. And, you know, that's just how the ball got rolling. You know, we stayed in contact as much as possible, you know, and, you know, it's like things were just so destined, you know, to happen, you know, the way, you know, things happened. And I really, really appreciate, you know, you, bro. I just want to tell you, you know, let everybody know, just here, you know, I really, really appreciate, you know, all the work that you've done. And I'll say this for the first time, on the air. Texas was a place that I've never wanted to visit. I sat back and I'm taking you back some decades that there's one place in this country I would never want to go. I've never wanted to visit. I've never considered even flying over. It would be Texas. I've never. And never say never. You know, never say never. And I'll tie that in with, you know,
oh, Brother Greg, you just had to get your mind right. I understand exactly what you're saying. I understand the thing, right? You just had to get your mind right. You had to get your mind right when you go down. Because a whole nother energy, bro. You know what I'm saying?
I think the ancestors had to, you know, slap me around a little bit because, you know, the second thing with never saying never is, you know, with baby girl, she's 3 years old, and my daughter right above her is 28. So for almost 25 years, I said I'll never have another child. I said never. After my first is 34, down to 32, 31, 28, and now 3. So in between that time, I said I'll never have another child. Because I do not want to bring a child into this world. And wow. I think the ancestors just gathered up in a little huddle and said, let's just show this fool, you know, something that he ain't really seen. And last year was my first time ever visiting Texas. It's been really on my mind, my heart, to, you know, spend a lot more time down there. You know, Rakim and I, we talked about, you know, coming down, visiting him. I definitely, you know, want to get down there. Unfortunately, I can't make it to this summit, but definitely going to be on a schedule, well, you know, not just for the summit, but just on a regular basis. But, hey, listen, my whole point is the ancestors work in ways that we have no clue to, because our level of vibrations at certain times are not where they need to be. And our ancestors step in and put them right where they need to be. And tonight was a fantastic show. And when Sister Chrissy, you came on and you said, you know, Sarnetta's reaching out to you, you know, and everybody is on that same vibration as Malcolm. Man, I mean, the light bulb and everything off went right off in me. Like, man, I was thinking about that so much today myself. And we just need to, you know, I just think gratitude and thanks need to go out to our ancestors. Malcolm, in particular, like you said, Crystal, he was the catalyst for many people, for me, as well as Kwame Ture. You know, when I first really got into him, he was still going by Stokely, you know, Carmichael. But at any rate, the ancestors move in mysterious ways. And tonight, you know, I know it was just a fantastic way that they were moving tonight. So, again, Rakim, I appreciate. Thank you so much. I could definitely say, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, us connecting, then that dot connecting with Crystal, connecting right now, I mean, the dots wouldn't have been connected, you know, if
well,
the vibration.
You created the connection, you know. I think this is a reflection of your organizing, because just being honest, you know, you manifested this, you know, you organized and reached out to get in communication, especially seeing that, you know, just like I was referencing with Malcolm X's daughter, you know, you saw that I was somebody that was under attack, and, you know, I feel like that you tried and you did your best, and you did, you know, support me. You brought me out there to the East Coast, you know, and helped extend my network, you know, and establish relationships and solidarity with additional people, such as Brother Minister Clemson Brown, you know, and many, you know, I got to meet face to face, you know, Brother Bo Money, you know, so many people, you know, Q Butter, you know, so many comrades on the East Coast, Philadelphia to New York to New Jersey. And other places too. I want to say somebody from Connecticut, but numerous people I was able to extend my solidarity and extend relationships with due to you. And not only that, but you secured me on the East Coast, you know, along, you know, with Sister Crystal as well, you know, and I felt very comfortable, and I felt home, and I still feel like that's home, you know. And, you know, once this case is over with, you know, I definitely will, you know, will be back, you know. But, you know, I thank you for that experience, brother, you know, and that experience is very instrumental to my development, and it was need to be had, and I'm thankful for that.
Black power.
Oh, I love
that's
it.
Right,
it
sister. Black power every hour on the Tutmosis and Kara Al-Kibalon News Hour. Here with Comrade Rakim Balogun, talking about revolutionary experience, talking about the connection with the ancestral revolutionary history of New Africans in the United States. building upon the foundation of revolutionary Pan-African socialism. Sister Crystal.
Yes, sir.
At this point, I guess we're winging it, so I want to definitely have you come on and give us a salute and shout out. Then we'll just keep on rocking until whenever.
Well, you know, I do, you know, tonight is a special night. All of you brothers are very important as far as for the movement. And sisters, you know what I'm saying? The young sister, her spirit, you know, it's genuine, it's pure, you know, and everything that we're doing today is for, to be honest, is for the next generations. We're going to affect now, but we're laying a platform for next generations. And, you know, I want to be, you know, for people who might not get it, we have some very dynamic personalities on the line tonight. And we come from different perspectives, but we all on this same battlefield together. So, you know, we have different roles that we all play, you know what I'm saying? But I can say one thing is very real in this field. You know, we ain't going to tell no lies, and we ain't going to claim no easy victories. A lot of information was dropped tonight, you know. You can take any one of these subject matters that was put on the table, and it can be a show with the series within and of itself, you know, but I do want to yield and, you know, pass the mic to Brother Rakim. I met Brother Rakim years ago in Dallas, you know, doing different trainings, doing different maneuvers, and he's always been a solid comrade, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, when he came under attack, not once but twice, it was our duty to assist him. Same way with you, Brother Tutmos and Brother Sharif. And as we speak right now, Brother Conrad Ozone needs our help. He's being targeted. You know, this beast is targeting specific individuals. And the reason why you're being targeted, you know, Rakim or Tut, you're not being, or myself or Greg, we're not, but in particular, I want to zero in on Rakim. Because of the work on the ground with working with the everyday brothers and sisters, and not only from the political educational standpoint, but also on the armed side. I don't want to downplay that, you know what I'm saying? Because the programs are definitely good for the people, you know what I'm saying? We must have programs. We must be self-sufficient, you know, but armed struggle is very going to be a part of our survival, you know. The work that you're doing, Tutmos, internationally on the Pan-African perspective, you know, I want to say Pan-Africanism is inclusive of what we're doing here. That's why it's Pan-Africanism, you know. In our manual, it says that we are Black nationalist, Pan-African, revolutionary scientists. And Tutmos added, socialist, and all of the above is inclusive. It doesn't, and this is the point I was trying to get at. We all have a part in this, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, some people are good at putting together forums that's relevant, putting together events, just like Brother Greg, you know what I'm saying? That is key, you know what I'm saying? Tutmos, y'all host some very powerful events in Atlanta and different parts of the country. The work of the political prisoners is so key, you know what I'm saying? The economic component is key. Reparations is key. Repatriation is key. Everything is on the table.
Right.
But as Malcolm said, by any means necessary, you know, he was a global brother. He took our plight to the UN to charge genocide. You know what I'm saying? Let's be real. At the time, from what I heard at the time of Malcolm, Malcolm was targeted. You know, we know this. There was divisions that were going on within the nation. We know this. You know what I'm saying? The spirit of envy, the spirit of COINTEL, but we also have Negro tail. Negroes be envious. you might be getting too much spotlight. I think that we've all been victims of that. I know this. I know for a fact you've been a victim of Negro Tell Pro Tutmost. I know you've been a victim of Negro. I know you've been a victim of Negro Tell Pro Joaquin. I'm constantly a victim of Negro Tell Pro. You know what I'm saying? COINTELPRO,
Negro Tell Pro. Goddamn, that's one for the lexicon right there. Negro Tell Pro.
These Negroes, they're not even getting paid by the cracker, but they sick in the head. And some of the things, you know, it's like this. If you, Captain David Foreman used to always say, the puppies were the big dogs until the big dog showed up. You know what I'm saying? And so, and I think Brother Greg or somebody mentioned earlier today, you know, there's a perspective that was laid out by all of you about everybody playing the lane that they in. You know what I'm saying? It's something we all can do. So I would like to, you know, ask, you know, Brother Rakim, not trying to take off your show, brother, but I just want to know if there's something, you know, that before they cut us off that you want to lay out that you didn't get to really lay out, or have you covered everything?
Some strategy, Rakim. Think strategy, bro. Give us some strategy. I know what Crystal's looking for. I'm looking for it, too. Give us some strategy. We see, just really quickly, Rakim, see, you are a figure in history. I mean, man, damn it. There's a Wikipedia page on you and all this shit. Right? So that revolutionary struggle is what the sister just finished saying, what the brother Greg just finished saying, that we respect in you. And that's why you're on this platform, and it's an honor for me, because you know I've been, you know, for a couple of years now, like, let's do this, you know. And so we're here now. And so I want to say to you personally, I honor you as a comrade, as a fighter. I know what the cracker think of you. Hell, it's in the open. They got a whole damn wiki page on your ass. And so for me, for you to be on the platform with me and strategize with me is an honor for me, even with my history. And I got some history behind me, you know. But I recognize you, bro. Keep on fighting. Keep on with those ideas. Keep on pushing them forward. And like Sister Crystal just said, don't play down the arms aspect. Keep it balanced. Do both of them. Do the economic and the arm. Don't play down the arm. I concur with the sister's analysis. But for me, Black Power salute to you, brother.
Black Power, and you know, I definitely think I'm thankful for the value that you guys have for me. Just understand that it's definitely mutual. You know, I love you all. You guys are my family, and you know, I look forward. You know, I'm thankful for, you know, my first 10 years, and I'm looking forward for my next set of 10 years of organizing with you guys and continue to, you know, progress and move forward and, you know, become a family. You know, I look forward to up to older age, and we're able to look back and even remember this moment, you know. So I just want to let you guys know it's definitely been a pleasure on my end.
You're right. I know Collard is smiling. I know he's smiling. What you say, Sister Crystal?
Most definitely. Oh man, y'all know what? Oh, my apologies to the to the guests. We had we just lost it. It was a 213 area code. Had their hand up.
Oh,
I got a.
Who's that?
We got another brother calling. Let me see if it's gonna work. Brother Yaya, do you have any specific question or comment to our guests or tonight's topic Black Power.
Black Power.
Assalamu alaikum. May the peace of the Creator be with everyone in Black Power. My apologies. I just receiving the nourishment and press number one to say Black Power to our future world leader, Brother Greg's young daughter, and Creator willing, inshallah, inshallah, Creator willing, I have this feeling in my heart that I will be alive when this young warrior, this young woman is going to announce taking on a leadership position, and I will get to vote. And I just wanted to say
I
that.
I feel the same way, brother. I feel the same way.
Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah. Well, my apologies for interrupting. And we'd like to continue listening, Creator willing. And
thank you, buddy.
So all these geniuses, just geniuses and unbelievable wisdom and humility, and my apologies for interrupting.
Oh, okay. So no problem, bro. Yeah, no apology needed, brother. Black Power. So we have an area code.
No apology needed, Black Power.
We have an area code. Hold on, we got area code 574. What is your question and or comment? Well, what is your name? What city you are calling from? And what is your question and or comment? 574 Erico, your mic is up. Black Power.
Black Power, this is Gagu. I just had a comment. I just wanted to say I appreciate the podcast tonight. Over the past few days, I have been feeling like I've been slipping mentally over what happened to Honorable Malcolm X's daughter. Even posted on my Facebook that I wasn't all right. And I usually don't reach out to other revolutionaries. I am a child of the movement. I'm a Panther Cub, and this conversation really massaged my mind tonight.
Black Power, so. Sister. Black Power, and I appreciate your message to us, and that same feeling goes out from all of us from the community. I don't know if you were on earlier, but I received a call yesterday early from Professor James Smalls, and it broke me down. I knew you find her, and just quickly, I'm so glad that you chimed in, sister, because I was actually pulling up that article. So that I could share it with the community about that death, just to see among us how it sounds. Malika Shabazz, one of the six daughters of slain civil rights leader Malcolm X, was found dead in her home in New York City, police said Tuesday. She was 56. Shabazz was found Monday in her home in Brooklyn. A police spokesperson said her death appeared to be from natural causes, he said. Malika and her twin sister, Malak, were the youngest daughters of Malcolm X, who was assassinated February 21st, 1965. Malika's death comes days after two of the three men who had been convicted of killing Malcolm X were exonerated. That's the key. So, we know what it is. It's practice. It's ritualism. Right? We know. So my thing is, like, how do we honor properly as New Africa, as a nation, for our sister? Let's organize now among us who are here. I definitely will be connected to and have been to, like I just mentioned, James Smalls, and what will be the proper ceremony for our queen sister. The revolutionary spirit of African people in the United States, our leadership, we know as New Africa, Malcolm is a saint.
His family is royalty. Do what we have to do. That's just from Brother Tutmost. And we are different organizations and doing what we have to do, but that's the word from me. Honor our sister. She was taken from us. It's suspicious. We already know what the deal is.
Yeah, no, thank you, brother, and to sister, Sister Gagu, you still here?
I'm still
I was want to say on another spiritual note, you know, I don't know what people's different spiritualities are, but yesterday, this is before I even knew about the queen, I went to go get some groceries, and I passed on the candle aisle, and I saw, you know, all these different candles, and I was like, which candle am I going to get to put on my altar? And some just said, you know what, just get a white candle for the ancestors. Just get a white candle. I couldn't, you know, my energy was kind of all over the place, and it was like the spirit said, just get a white candle to honor the ancestors. And so I got that candle, and I'm looking at it right now, and I didn't know that this, I didn't honestly see the news about her until after midnight last night, or we definitely would have mentioned it on the broadcast on yesterday. And so with that being said, regardless of what your spiritual belief may be, I believe it's universal that we light a candle in honor of not only Queen Malaika, and but also, you know, add the picture of Malcolm, because Malaika and her twin sister were in Betty Shabazz's womb. She was pregnant when Malcolm was assassinated. And this is very deep. This is very deep. And so, you know, upon, on this day, you talk about the rituals, a hell of a ritual and wickedness is getting ready to take place on Thursday when folks are going to be celebrating, you know, the massacre of our ancestors, the indigenous people of this country, who we know, despite the miseducation, were melanated people of Africa, you know, the indigenous of this land, because those of us who are consciousness, we know that our ancestors from the birthplace of Africa scattered all across the planet. And so from the massacre of the indigenous of our people here on this land, to the transatlantic slave trade, to the, which we call the Maafa, to the Jim Crow era, to the current tyranny that we are experiencing, let's light a candle for our ancestors, and let's call upon the energy that Malcolm is be with us, that Malcolm be with us in this day and hour, and that his spirit moves through us in our works and deeds, and that we get justice, that we get to the truth of what's happened to his daughter, what happened to his grandson, what happened to Malcolm. The person who did this, who has admitted, some of the people still walking around today, this next generation, like Brother Greg's son, daughter, must know the truth. If we're sitting around and waiting on the U.S. government to tell us, it'll be another 100 years. Let's do our own investigations. Everything that we say we need, from liberation to self-sustaining, is going to come at our hands. Ain't nobody going to come save us but us. And let's take that mentality. We thank and honor everyone who's here to come on tonight. But we do need to have a spiritual moment of silence, I would like to do right now. A spiritual moment of silence. Black power.
Black power.
Prayer without work is dead. Prayer without work is dead. We must pray. We must honor the dead. And we must keep fighting until we get true and complete liberation. Ashe. Black power.
Ashe.
Rakim, did you get to say your closing thoughts?
Yes. My mind is clear. I'm thankful for being invited. This is definitely a honorable experience, and hopefully you guys have me back.
Absolutely, bro. This is part one.
No doubt. No doubt.
We'll do this.
So with that being said,
we'll do this. We'll lay it out and do it on a monthly basis, and we'll have others. The platform is going to be moving to video, too. I want to let the community know we're working through radio, and actually now we're actually on Facebook Live, so I have been in the background. The community will see the red, black, and green flag there for Brother Tutmosis and Cars Live, and we will continue to bring this kind of revolutionary strategic information with our comrade Rakeem Balogun. So, you ready for the work, bro?
Yes, sir. Forward ever, backwards never.
Let's do it. So, for MBPP Radio, coming live to you right now, across the globe, to the African family. While we still on, anybody want to chime in to the community? I know we're a little bit greedy this evening.
Black
so
power.
Black power.
Right.
Black power.
Now what I could do, so if folks tried to chime on, if they wasn't already in the queue, it won't let you bring us on. But initially I had a brother. This is our brother out of Atlanta, Brother Abdul. Press one. Black power, Brother Abdul.
Oh, Brother Abdul.
Your mic is open, brother.
Black power. I just want to tell all the comrades and non-members, push hard. We on our own. Black power.
Black power, bro.
Push hard. We on our own. Black power. I mean, if our brother don't represent the true embodiment of, he ain't going to be long, but he going to be strong. Every time he step to the mic, it's exactly what he does.
Can I ask the comrade to say it one more time and say it hard and strong and give me a black power out this
one? One more time, ACL.
Push hard, push strong. Black power.
Black power. Push hard, push strong. What's it say, Rakim?
Black power. Solidarity.
Push hard, push strong.
Now I got a song. I was, before the program started, what I can do, or what I think is, I think the spirit is calling. Clearly, I know
yes,
that I
ma'am.
Can have to do at this moment. I want to play a quick song by Tupac, and then I want to play a clip from Malcolm. You know what? You know what, white man? You're not going to stop this. Wait a minute.
It's COINTELPRO.
And that was COINTELPRO.
We can't let them stop us.
I'm going to play a song from Tupac, and then I'm going to play a song from Tupac, and then I'm going to play a clip of Malcolm to take us on out. For those of you who support this broadcast, be sure to go to mbpp.org. Click that donate button if you want to join. Do the same thing. Oh, man. Kwame Ture keep popping up. Oh, this is crazy.
Well, that might be proper. But Malcolm is proper also.
Okay, I got to sign off because somebody wants to go to sleep, but she said she got one last word.
Black power, little sister.
Black power.
And you are the future queen. We look forward to your leadership in the future, young woman.
Black Power. I'm going to play this song. I think we need it. And then, Tutmosh, you got some closing words before I play this Tupac and then Malcolm?
As I, yes, ma'am, thank you very much. From Brother Tutmosh Sankara and NBPP Radio African family, as we close out this show with our comrade, Brother Rakim Balogun, on COINTELPRO and the analysis of New Africa. Remember, it's always the African family, as I always say. Stay vigilant.
Stay vigilant.
Something for my godson Elijah and a little girl named Corinne. To say the blacker the better, the sweeter the juice. I say the darker the flesh and the deeper the roots. I give a holler to my sister's own welfare. Tupac can, if don't nobody else care. And I know they like to beat you down a lot. And when you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. So please don't cry, dry your eyes, never let up. But don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe him. And if you can't learn to love you, you should leave him. Cause sister, you don't need him. And I ain't trying to catch up, I just call him how I see. You know what makes me unhappy? When brothers make mates and leave a young mother to be a cat. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and I came from a woman. I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women, do we hate our women. I think it's time to kill for our women, time to heal our women, be real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the ladies that make the babies. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, lady, but keep your head up. I remember Marvin Gaye used to sing to me. He had me feeling like black was the thing to be. And suddenly the ghetto didn't seem so tough. And though we had it rough, we always had enough. I huffed and puffed about my curfew and broke the rules. Ran with the local crew and had a smoke or two. I realized mama really paid the price. She nearly gave her life to raise me right. And all I had to give her was my pipe dream of how I rock the mic and make it to the right screen. Make a dollar out of missing sin. It's hard to be the shit and still pay your rent. And in the end it seems I'm heading for the pen. I try to find my friends, but they're blowing in the wind. Last night my buddy lost his whole family. It's gonna take the man in me to conquer this insanity. It seems the rain will never let up. I try to keep my head up and still keep from getting wetter. You know it's funny when it rains it pours. They got money for wars but can't feed the poor. Said it ain't no hope for the youth and the truth. And they wonder why we crazy. I blame my mother for turning my brother into a black baby. We ain't meant to survive cause it's a setup. And even though you're better, you got to on their own. I know it's kind of rough and you're feeling all alone. Daddy's long gone and he left you by your lonesome. Thanks the Lord for my kids, even if nobody else want them. Cause I think we can make it, in fact I'm sure. And if you fall, stand tall or come back for more. Cause ain't nothing worse than when your son wants to know why daddy don't love him no more. You can't complain, you were selfless. Hell of a hand without a man feeling helpless. Because there's too many things for you to deal with. Dying inside but outside you're looking big. While the tears is rolling down your cheek, you're steady hoping things don't all fall this week. Cause if it did you couldn't take it. And don't blame me, I was given this world, I didn't make it. And now my son's getting older and older and cold from having the world on his shoulders. While the rich kids are driving this, I'm still trying to hold on to surviving friends. And it's crazy, it seems I'm never
your head up.
The moderator, ladies and gentlemen, friends and enemies.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to have just an off-the-cuff chat between you and me, us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand. We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is us. We're her problem. The only reason she has a problem is she doesn't want us here. And every time you look at yourself, be you black, brown, red, or yellow, a so-called Negro, you represent a person who poses such a serious problem for America because you're not wanted. Once you face this as a fact, then you can start plotting a course that will make you appear intelligent instead of unintelligent. What you and I need to do is learn to forget our differences. When we come together, we don't come together as Baptists or Methodists. You don't catch hell because you're a Baptist, and you don't catch hell because you're a Methodist. You don't catch hell because you're a Methodist or a Baptist. You don't catch hell because you're a Democrat or a Republican. You don't catch hell because you're a Mason or an Elk. And you sure don't catch hell because you're an American, because if you was an American, you wouldn't catch no hell. You catch hell because you're a black man. You catch hell, all of us catch hell for the same reason. So we are all black people, so-called Negroes, second-class citizens, ex-slaves. You are nothing but an ex-slave. You don't like to be told that. But what else are you? You are ex-slave. You didn't come here on the Mayflower. You came here in a slave ship, in chains, like a horse or a cow or a chicken. And you were brought here by the people who came here on the Mayflower. You were brought here by the so-called pilgrims or founding fathers. They were the ones who brought you here. We have a common enemy. We have this in common. We have a common oppressor, a common exploiter, and a common discriminator. So once we all realize that we have this common enemy, then we unite on the basis of what we have in common. And what we have foremost in common is that enemy, the white man. He's an enemy to all of us. I know some of you all think that some of them aren't enemies. Time will tell. In Bandung, back in, I think, 1954, was the first unity meeting in centuries of black people. And once you study what happened at the Bandung Conference and the results of the Bandung Conference, it actually serves as a model for the same procedure you and I can use to get our problems solved. At Bandung, all the nations came together. They were dark nations from Africa and Asia. Some of them were Buddhists. Some of them were Muslim. Some of them were Christian. Some of them were Confucianists. Some were atheists. Despite their religious differences, they came together. Some were communists. Some were socialists. Some were capitalists. Despite their economic and political differences, they came together. All of them were black, brown, red, or yellow. The number one thing that was not allowed to attend the Bandung Conference was the white man. He couldn't come. Once they excluded the white man, they found that they could get together. Once they kept him out, everybody else fell right in and fell in line. This is the thing that you and I have to understand. And these people who came together didn't have nuclear weapons. They didn't have jet planes. They didn't have all of the heavy armaments that the white man has. But they had unity. They were able to submerge their little petty differences and agree on one thing, that though one African came from Kenya and was being colonized by the Englishmen, and another African came from the Congo and was being colonized by the Belgian, and another African came from Guinea and was being colonized by the French, and another came from Angola and was being colonized by the Portuguese.
Yeah.
When they came to the Bandung Conference, they looked at the Portuguese and at the Frenchmen and at the Englishmen and at the other Dutchmen and learned or realized that the one thing that all of them had in common, they were all from Europe. They were all from, they were all Europeans, blonde, blue-eyed, and white-skinned. They began to recognize who their enemy was. The same man that was colonizing our people in Kenya was colonizing our people in the Congo. The same one in the Congo was colonizing our people in South Africa and in southern Rhodesia and in Burma and in India and in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. They realized all over the world where a dark man was being oppressed, he was being oppressed by the white man. Where the dark man was being exploited, he was being exploited by the white man. So they got together under this basis, that they had a common enemy. And when you and I here in Detroit and in Michigan and in America, who have been awakened today, look around us, we too realize here in America, we all have a common enemy. Whether he's in Georgia or Michigan, whether he's in California or New York, he's the same man. Blue eyes and blonde hair and pale skin. Same man. So what we have to do is what they did. They agreed to stop quarreling among themselves. Any little spat that they had, they'd settle it among themselves. Go into a huddle. Don't let the enemy know that you got a disagreement. Instead of us airing our differences in public, we have to realize we're all the same family. And when you have a family squabble, you don't get out on the sidewalk. If you do, everybody calls you uncouth, unrefined, uncivilized, savage. If you don't make it at home, you settle it at home. You get in the closet, argue it out behind closed doors. And then when you come out on the street, you pose a common front, a united front. And this is what we need to do in the community and in the city and in the state. We need to stop airing our differences in front of the white man. Put the white man out of our meeting, number one, and then sit down and talk shop with each other. That's all you gotta do. I would like to make a few comments concerning the difference between the Black Revolution and the Negro Revolution. There's a difference. Are they both the same? And if they're not, what is the difference? What is the difference between a Black Revolution and a Negro Revolution? First, what is a revolution? Sometimes I'm inclined to believe that many of our people are using this word revolution loosely, without taking careful consideration what this word actually means and what its historic characteristics are. When you study the historic nature of revolutions, the motive of a revolution, the objective of a revolution, and the result of a revolution, and the methods used in a revolution, you may change words. You may devise another program. You may change your goal and you may change your mind. Look at the American Revolution in 1776. That revolution was for what? For land. How was it? Why did they want land? Independence. How was it carried out? Bloodshed. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Number one, it was based on land. The basis of independence. And the only way they could get it was bloodshed. The French Revolution What was it based on? The landless against the landlord. What was it for? Land. How did they get it? Bloodshed. Was no love lost. Was no compromise. Was no negotiation. I'm telling you, you don't know what a revolution is. Because when you find out what it is, you'll get back in the alley. You'll get out of the way. The moment. The Russian Revolution. What was it based on? Land. The landless against the landlord. How did they bring it about? Bloodshed. You haven't got a revolution that doesn't involve bloodshed. Then you're afraid to bleed. I said you're afraid to bleed. As long as the white man sent you to Korea, you bled. He sent you to Germany, you bled. He sent you to the South Pacific to fight the Japanese, you bled. You bleed for white people. But when it comes time to seeing your own churches being bombed and little black girls murdered, you haven't got no blood. You bleed when the white man says bleed. You bite when the white man says bite. And you bark when the white man says bark. I hate to say this about us, but it's true. How are you going to be nonviolent in Mississippi as violent as you were in Korea? How can you justify being nonviolent in Mississippi and Alabama when your churches are being bombed and your little girls are being murdered, and at the same time you're going to get violent with Hitler and Tojo and somebody else that you don't even know? If violence is wrong in America, violence is wrong abroad. If it's wrong to be violent, defending black women and black children and black babies and black men, then it's wrong for America to draft us and make us violent abroad in defense of her. The Chinese Revolution. They wanted land. They threw the British out, along with the Uncle Tom Chinese. Yeah, they did. They set a good example. When I was in prison, I read an article, and don't be shocked when I say I was in prison. You're still in prison. That's what America means, prison. When I was in prison, I read an article in Life magazine showing a little Chinese girl, 9 years old. Her father was on his hands and knees, and she was pulling the trigger because he was an Uncle Tom Chinaman. Yeah. When they had the revolution over there, they took a whole generation of Uncle Toms, right, just wiped them out. And within 10 years, that little girl became a full-grown woman. No more Toms in China. And today is one of the toughest, roughest, most feared countries on this earth by the white man, because there are no Uncle Toms over there. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward all research. And when you see that you got problems, all you have to do is examine the historic method used all over the world by others who had problems similar to yours. And once you see how they got theirs straight, then you know how you can get yours straight. Please. There's been a revolution, a black revolution, going on in Africa. In Kenya, the Mau Mau were revolutionaries. They were the ones who made the word Uhuru. They were the ones who brought it to the fore. The Mau Mau, they were revolutionaries. They believed in scorched earth. They knocked everything aside that got in their path. And their revolution also was based on land, a desire for land. In Algeria, the northern part of Africa, a revolution took place. The Algerians were revolutionists. They wanted land. France offered to let them be integrated into France. They told France to hell with France. They wanted some land, not some France. And they engaged in a bloody battle. So I cite these various revolutions, brothers and sisters, to show you, you don't have a peaceful revolution. You don't have a turn the other cheek revolution. There's no such thing as a nonviolent revolution. Only kind of revolution that's nonviolent is the Negro Revolution. The only revolution based on loving your enemy is the Negro Revolution. The only revolution in which the goal is a desegregated lunch counter, a desegregated theater, a desegregated park, and a desegregated public toilet. You can sit down next to white folks on the toilet. That's no revolution. Revolution is based on land. Land is the basis of all independence. Land is the basis of freedom, justice, and equality. The white man knows what a revolution is. He knows that the black revolution is worldwide in scope and in nature. The black revolution is sweeping Asia, sweeping Africa. It's rearing its head in Latin America. The Cuban Revolution, that's a revolution. They overturned the system. Revolution is in Asia. Revolution is in Africa. And the white man is screaming because he sees revolution in Latin America. How do you think he'll react to you when you learn what a real revolution is? You don't know what a revolution is. If you did, you wouldn't use that word. A revolution is bloody. Revolution is hostile. Revolution knows no compromise. Revolution overturns and destroys everything that gets in its way. And you sitting around here like a knot on these folks, no matter how much they hate me. No, you need a revolution. Ever heard of a revolution where they lock arms, as Reverend Klieg was pointing out beautifully, singing "We Shall Overcome"? Just tell me you don't do that in a revolution. You don't do any singing. You're too busy swinging. It's based on land. A revolutionary wants land so he can set up his own nation.
That's right.
An independent nation.
That's right.
These Negroes aren't asking for no nation. They're trying to crawl back on the plantation. When you want a nation, that's called nationalism. When the white man became involved in a revolution in this country against England, what was it for? He wanted this land so he could set up another white nation. That's white nationalism. The American Revolution was white nationalism. The French Revolution was white nationalism. The
Russian Revolution too. Yes, it was white nationalism. You don't think so? Why you think Khrushchev and Mao can't get their heads together? White nationalism. All the revolutions that's going on in Asia, in Africa today, are based on what? Black nationalism. A revolutionary is a black nationalist. He wants a nation. I was reading some beautiful words by Reverend Klee, pointing out why he couldn't get together with someone else here in the city. Because all of them were afraid of being identified with black nationalism. If you're afraid of black nationalism, you're afraid of revolution. And if you love revolution, you love black nationalism.